Do you like Sheffield Live? Why not become a friend of Sheffield Live? Sheffield Live is a community radio station, and Friends of Sheffield Live are people in the community who make a regular donation to keep Sheffield Live on the air. Join the Friends of Sheffield Live by writing to friends@sheffieldlive.org or go online to sheffieldlive.org/friends.
Yeah, this is the poet Benjamin Zephaniah coming down your radio wire, and you are listening to Sheffield Live on 93.2 FM, my friend.
We're open for business live.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insights and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office on 0114 285 9500 or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday, the 22nd of April, 2016. My name's Jamie Veach. I'm your presenter for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We're broadcasting on 93.2 FM and through our internet live stream. And this show was pre-recorded on Thursday, the 21st of April. The show will also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. In today's show, we're talking with Pete Brown, author of a new report that claims Sheffield is the world's best beer city. We're also talking with Jackie Freeborn and John Barber of Workwise about the Get Up to Speed event, which took place on Wednesday at Magna. We'll hear from John Silker, the chief executive of Magna 2, alongside Anne Wilson of New Mill Engineering, Jim Lawson of the Wasco Brown Foundation, Lucy Machin and Lauren Browning of the University of Sheffield, James Allen, a team leader at Rolls-Royce, and Jess Herbert, an apprentice at Rolls-Royce, Chris Harrop of Prior, and Nick Naylor of the Bloodhound Education Team. If you know what Bloodhound is, you're in for a treat. If you don't, you're also in for a treat. It's a very, very fast vehicle. But it's not just about breaking speed records. It also has educational benefits and business benefits too. So before we turn to our interviews, quick roundup of what's going on in business and social enterprise. A new report from the Federation for Small Businesses, Women in Enterprise, The Untapped Potential, explores the specific challenges faced by women-led businesses and makes recommendations for improving support, developing mentoring networks, and increasing the diversity of business ambassadors. FSB itself plans to launch a dedicated Women in Enterprise task force to support women entrepreneurs and business owners. The report itself finds women-led businesses face many of the same challenges that all small firms encounter, including cash flow issues and difficulty accessing finance. But it says there appear to be issues which are more acute for women business owners. The report comes after the Federation for Small Businesses spoke to over 1,900 women business owners in the UK. Key challenges they describe include balancing work and family life, achieving credibility for the business, and a lack of confidence. Report is available in full at the FSB website, which is fsb.org.uk. Sheffield can lay claim to be the real ale capital of the world, according to a brand new report launched yesterday. And according to the report, the city doesn't do enough, though, to promote its excellence in beer. But with appropriate support, it could be turned into an incredible beer destination for tourists. There are 57 breweries in the Sheffield City region. 31 of them have opened in the last 5 years. And here in the city, there's one brewery for every 23,991 people. That's nearly five times as many as in London. We'll be talking later in the programme with the report author, Pete Brown, and who says that Sheffield has the right to compete for the title of the world's greatest beer city, rivaling Munich in Germany, Bruges in Belgium, or even Portland, Oregon in the USA. The paper was commissioned by Professor Vanessa Toulmin, who's the Director of City and Cultural Engagement at the University of Sheffield, and it follows reports focusing on music and the arts. Stay tuned for more from that paper later on. A new initiative was launched this week to encourage big businesses to buy more goods and services from the UK's social enterprise sector to help it to prosper and grow. The Buy Social Corporate Challenge is led by Social Enterprise UK in partnership with the Cabinet Office and Business in the Community. It's supporting initially a group of high-profile businesses, pledging to spend £1 billion with social enterprises by 2020. The partners on board already are Interserve, Johnson & Johnson, PwC, RBS Group, Santander, Waits and Zurich. But the hope is to enlist far more businesses from a diverse range of industries. The initiative was launched with a reception at 11 Downing Street this week. This week is, of course, also Responsible Business Week. And the partners are going to be supported with training for their procurement teams on how to source and buy from social enterprises and the advantages of doing so. And on the theme of responsible businesses and social enterprises working in collaboration, the Wasco Brown Foundation, who say they're committed to assisting businesses, charities and social enterprises and sports clubs in the region to sustain and grow, are running a series of events across the region in Sheffield, Barnsley, Doncaster and Rotherham between April and July. The first one is next Tuesday. They're encouraging business leaders, social enterprise leaders, not-for-profit leaders, for-profit leaders to come along to the event. Entrepreneurs will gain insights from values-driven organisations. Third sector leaders will gain insights on entrepreneurial or commercial thinking. But each leader will both give and take with positive outcomes. Stronger, more commercially minded, more robust charities and social enterprises and new opportunities for businesses to engage in CSR and community organisations, according to the Wasco Brown Foundation. Now, the first event takes place next Tuesday, the Workstation, 6 p.m. till 8 p.m. So that's Tuesday, April the 26th. You can come along. It's free. I'll be there myself. And you can find the details on Eventbrite. Go to eventbrite.co.uk, then look up Enterprising Partners Networking Roadshow Sheffield. You should find it easily. Now, as ever, I'd welcome your views on what's going on in business and social enterprise. Get in touch with this programme with Sheffield Live by email. Email jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Text me 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter as well. Whether you're starting, whether you're running a business or a social enterprise. If you're self-employed, if you're an employer, we're keen to hear from you. So let's turn now to our first guest. Now, on Thursday, I caught up with Pete Brown. Pete's the author of a new report, the Sheffield Beer Report, which finds the diversity and the range and the strength of the brewing sector in Sheffield is remarkable. Around 400 different unique beers are available in the city's pubs on a typical day. There are 57 breweries across the Sheffield city region. 86% of Sheffield's brewers could be described as micro breweries. But they plan to expand. Two-thirds of them say they will expand and grow in the next 12 months. Sheffield, according to the report, is the best-kept secret in the beer world. With such a dynamic brewing sector, in the middle of a global boom in interest in well-made and flavourful beer, the report says that Sheffield should be expected to have a national or even international reputation as a premier beer city. But it doesn't. The report give some recommendations on how it can do that. So yesterday, as in on Thursday, I caught up with the author in the Sheffield Tap, and we'll hear from Pete Brown, the author, now. Pete, thanks very much for joining us now. Fantastic, positive report. Sheffield is one of the premier beer cities in the world, but I need to tell people.
Absolutely. I mean, I always knew, always known that Sheffield made some great beer and was a fantastic place to drink beer. I had no idea just how far it had come until I was commissioned to do this report. And the numbers are staggering. It puts Sheffield easily on a national stage, and I would argue on a global stage, in terms of the most impressive beer cities.
One of the problems seems to be that we like our own beer so much. we don't let anyone else enjoy it.
Well, Sheffield, most of Sheffield's brewers are very small. About 4 out of 5 of them are kind of 1, 2, 3-man operations. And they lack the infrastructure to kind of get their beer out beyond Sheffield. And this cuts both ways. It means that Sheffield has an incredible number of beers that you can only get here, which makes Sheffield a fantastic destination for beer drinkers who know about the beer. But it also means that further afield, people don't really realise how great Sheffield's brewers are.
Quite. And yet, if we did, if we followed some of your recommendations, then there's a really positive impact on businesses, on business tourism potentially, on beer tourism potentially to the city. And you made a number of recommendations in terms of what we should do.
Absolutely. I think the first thing is that people should shout about how great Sheffield's beer scene is. We could ask the brewers to shout about it, but my experience of people in the north having grown up here is that people in the north don't like showing off. So the brewers don't necessarily shout about it themselves. So they need some help from broader authorities. Also, a lot of these very, very small operations, they don't have time to invest in marketing and publicity. So it needs some more joint cooperation, some kind of big joint event. And it needs external support from people like tourism authorities and the council and business development organisations. If you were to Google world's best beer cities, you'll get lists of great beer drinking destinations, all of them which have their own merits. But Sheffield isn't mentioned on one of these roundups. And Sheffield really does compete with the best. It has more breweries, it has a huge range of styles of beer, these great beer trails, and that needs to be shouted about.
So promotion and collaborative promotion is absolutely crucial here.
Promotion and collaborative promotion is crucial. I think it needs a kind of dedicated PR resource. When I was writing this report, I went onto Sheffield Tourism websites to try and find details of beer trails, great pubs to drink in, that kind of thing. It's very hard to find that information. When you do find it, it's out of date. So that really needs to be brought up to speed, and then it needs to be broadcast out there. As a beer writer, I'm regularly invited to visit places like Bruges, Flanders, the Czech Republic, on beer tours, and to see the effect that beer tourism has. I've never been invited to Sheffield. I have been by individual brewers who I know, but I've seen no involvement from sort of broader tourism authorities.
And this could have a massive impact in terms of bringing money into the city, bringing tourists who are going to spend money in accommodation, in enjoyment, and putting Sheffield on the map here.
Well, what we already have in Sheffield is beer aficionados will travel hundreds of miles to come here and drink the beers. They're people who know, and they come here, they don't just put money into pubs and into the breweries. There are various different real ale trails through Sheffield. You can't do them all in one day. So people come here, they spend money in hotels, in restaurants, they come here for the beer, they spend money that benefits the broader community. If we were to advertise Sheffield as a beer destination a bit more, craft beer is going through a huge national global boom at the moment. People are more interested in beer. They want to do beer tourism. They want to visit interesting beer destinations. They don't know about Sheffield, and we need to tell them.
So we need to tell them. You've also talked about education in terms of education in brewing as one of your recommendations. Mm.
There are two brewing courses, to the best of my knowledge, in the UK, one in Heriot-Watt in Edinburgh, and a new one that's just started in Nottingham. There has been sort of tentative brewing course, postgraduate course at Sheffield, but I believe that this is no longer happening, and that's a real shame. Sheffield is seen as a centre of beer. It makes sense for there to be some kind of beer education here.
Okay, superb. So there's a potential bright future here. Yeah. Sheffield is a beer city. It is justifiably a beer city on a world level as well. With collaboration, with education, with PR and marketing, then it could go even further. That would be
absolutely. It could really come to be. I see no reason why Sheffield couldn't be seen as the world's leading beer city, which seems like an incredible claim to make when you're sitting here. But the number of brewers and the number of beers brewed easily puts it in that sort of category. I think one of the problems is that Sheffield beer tends to stay here. We can go through to the bar here and we can find beers from all over the world. If you went to any of the places where those beers are brewed, you wouldn't find any Sheffield beer there. One of the issues is that a lot of these small-scale brewers, they don't have access to packaging their beers in cans or bottles. So most of Sheffield's beer is sold as excellent cask ale in the city's pubs. If we had a communally owned canning line or bottling line, we could get Sheffield beer out to a much broader footprint nationally and internationally and really help put the city on the map.
What would be a, otherwise a very expensive investment for one small brewer to be shared? It's again part of collaboration.
A bottling line or a canning line is one of the most expensive investments that a brewery can make. But there is precedent in the southeast. There's a cooperatively owned bottling line that was bought by three brewers who were equal partners in it, and then they leased that out to other small brewers. There's no reason why we couldn't have something like that in Sheffield. There's certainly the space to put something like that in the heart of the city. All the brewers who would want to use it are within a few miles, and we could just see Sheffield's beer hitting the whole country from there.
Well, sounds like a great opportunity, and it must have been a fascinating process writing this report. It must have been an enjoyable process as well, one which our listeners who enjoy beer will be quite envious of you, Pete.
It is quite wonderful coming to Sheffield to be asked to do something like this. I know the city well. I spent a lot of time here. I grew up in Barnsley, but I've lived in London for 25 years now. And to be asked to come back and be the author of this report was a great privilege. I already knew where I wanted to go. I knew that if I went down to Kelham Island, I would find some great pubs and some great brewers. I knew that if I spoke to Thornbridge, I would get an inspiring story from them. I know the Sheffield tap so well that I knew I would find a great range of beers in here. What I didn't realise was that I would find 57 breweries in the broader Sheffield region and 23 breweries in the city centre itself. That's astonishing.
The figures are astonishing, they're superb, and the report itself is a great read. So take a look at the report. Pete Brown, author, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Pete Brown there, author of the new Sheffield Beer Report, which was launched yesterday, Thursday the 21st of April. Pete was talking with me in the Sheffield Tap. Now, on Wednesday of this week, I went along to a Get Up to Speed with Engineering and Manufacturing event, which took place in Magna Science Adventure Centre. Around 2,000 people attended. It was run in association with Workwise. And one of their headline attractions was the Bloodhound supersonic car. So whilst there, I talked with a whole range of people, including Jackie Freeborn of Workwise and John Barber of Workwise, John Silker, who's the chief executive of Magna, Anne Wilson of Newmill Engineering, Jim Lawson, the Wasco Brown Foundation, Lucy Machin and Lauren Browning of the University of Sheffield, James Allen, a team leader at Rolls-Royce, alongside Jess Herbert, who's an apprentice at Rolls-Royce, Chris Harrop of Prior, and Nick Naylor of the Bloodhound Education Team. We're going to play a whole range of interviews now, all recorded on Wednesday at the Get Up to Speed event. First up, Jackie Freeborn. So good afternoon, Jackie. What a fantastic event. Best one ever. How many people have come through?
Well, we reckon by the end of this evening, we've probably had nearly 2,000 people, and the majority of those have been young people. So probably about 1,600, 1,700 young people, we estimate, will have come through the doors today. So amazing.
So they've been in through the doors, and then they've had the chance to talk with businesses and to get engaged and excited about the whole range of careers that they have open to them, and they've left inspired, excited and raring to go. Superb.
I hope so, and I think that was the whole thing about employers and apprentices, actually give the right messages to young people, because as teachers, as parents, we seem to be nagging, this is what you've got to do, this is how you're going to do it, but actually those same messages come across a lot better and they stick with young people if it comes from an employer or it comes from an apprentice as well. And I think it's very useful to speak to apprentices, because they can say what happened to them at school and what they were thinking about doing. And it's very, very different when you do start work. And that transition mode, as we heard from a report from government just a couple of weeks ago, is incredibly important, getting the right careers advice. And it's not just about the types of jobs, it's about the skills, the employability skills, the attitude that you need to actually get an interview and do that sort of stuff.
So it's not just about hard skills, it's about aptitude, attitude, employability as well, as you said. Now, coming here and meeting people and talking with them gives young people the chance to actually learn about what it is employers want. But as you say, it's also about this is exciting people in terms of real life careers. It makes it real. Now, you couldn't do this without the support of all the businesses that come here, all the employers who come here, and you've have a fantastic, phenomenal turnout, but also some incredibly exciting businesses are here. How do you get them to support you?
Nag. No, I think what it is, it's about inspiring them as well. Yeah. Because, you know, and the thing is, we have lots of skill shortages in our area. And I think engineering and manufacturing, we've got a very ageing workforce. And a lot of employers are now waking up to the fact that we've got to start investing in young people at an early age. They don't just turn up at 16 or 18 inspired about work, inspired to work in engineering and manufacturing. And if you were taking a new product to market, you would do your market research and you would start working and selling who you are to people that want to buy your product. So it's exactly the same if you want to encourage and entice young people to want to work for you when they leave school. We have a selling job to do because, you know, I think the sector has taken many hits, and I do think that people think that engineering manufacturing is just about making steel, which of course it is, but there are so many different variations about science, technology, engineering and maths. In fact, the challenge is you think of something in your life that is not touched by science, technology, engineering and maths, something in life, something in work. It's incredibly, basically everything that you can imagine, where somebody's imagined it, they've designed it, they've made it, whether it's a shoe, whether it's a pair of glasses, whether or not it's a car, and that's the whole thing about broadening people's perspective of that and getting a wide range of employers to engage in that. And you know what? We've got the most amazing employers in our region. A lot of them are small and medium-sized companies. We don't got many large companies here, but they just really get behind it. They love it, actually. And they, a lot of their apprentices now go into schools as well as coming in, and it helps develop their skills as well.
Yeah.
You know, communication skills, problem-solving skills. So it's not just a one-way street.
No, it's a win-win here.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think for some of the young people here, you know, it was just talk to people. It's the hardest thing in the world when you're 15, 16, 17, for many people to go up and say, tell me what you do, what do you want? So in a way, it's about encouraging them to develop a vocabulary and have the confidence to ask, because you will only find out if you ask. And that's what I say, just talk to everybody and anybody about the story, about the company. This is the best opportunity you've got to absorb information.
They've done it.
And they have. And what's been really great is that the employees have said to us, just the new employees, crikey, just look how articulate they are, just look how imaginative, just look how engaged they are. And I do think that helps address this negative image about young people not wanting to work, not being fit for work. Do you know, if young people are not ready for work, it's not their fault. It's our fault that we have not given them an opportunity to develop the skills necessary to make that transition. I'm really, really clear and firm about that. It's our responsibility. We fetch children into the world. We can't expect them to actually make that transition straight away. We've got to work with schools and businesses to try and make that a much better way to do that.
Well, superb, and you're certainly doing that, putting your efforts, well, putting your money where your mouth is, we could say, of course. Now, this isn't the only thing that you do. It's one of the biggest things that you do, but this event will be back next year, of course, but you've got all sorts of other initiatives going on through WorkWise through the whole year. People can find out more about that from your website, and it'd be worth listeners taking a look, whether they're employers who think, this is fantastic, we want to benefit from this, because, as you say, it's not just a one-way street. But we want to support this as well, and we need to support this. Whether it's young people who are listening to this programme, thinking about careers. Now, they can find out more, obviously, at the Get Up to Speed website itself, but they can also find out more at WorkWise as well. And it would be worth also just finishing by talking about some of the initiatives that you've got running over the next few months.
Right, then. So a little bit of that WorkWise Foundation. We were set up... Well, I saw... There was a number of us got round the table and said, there's a real issue here. And so we were set up by local employers. Everything that we do is to employer standard. So what we looked at initially was, what is the basic requirement you need to start work, and let's work back. So we developed an employability competency framework around all those softer skills. And we also looked at what sort of qualifications and how to apply, say, maths and English and science, everything, and the world of work. So everything that we have done, it's with future employment in mind. It's not to meet the educational curriculum, although indeed it does that. So we do things, we have like a summer camp. we recognise that many schools now don't do work experience. It is the most important thing anybody will ever do, to have an experience of the world of work. So in the summer holidays, young people give up anything between a week and 2 weeks of the holidays. They come on summer camp with us, they learn about the skills, they go out on placement, they get a ceremony badge at the Cutlass Hall after. Amazing thing. We do the innovation competition, which is about linking young people up with a business, set a real business challenge, and they solve that. It's judged here at Get Up to Speed. Yep. We do the Cutlass Ambassador Programme, which is working with children from year 9 to year 11 over a 2 or 3 year period so they can develop these skills. And we've just started working with a primary school. We've got a primary offer. Developing STEM skills and softer employability skills. We've translated employability skills into age-related things. So, for example, team building is, I enjoy working, I'm good at working with my friends. Resilience, another great employability skills is, I keep trying when things get hard. So we're very gently drip-feeding those in a primary school now, so when they get into secondary school, they feel much more confident. In fact, we've had some here, and you ought to have seen them selling. They're selling their school to employees, come and work, you know, come to us and see what it's all about.
So how satisfying that must be.
It absolutely is. And the other thing to say is, we also work with employers, because it's not, if you're doing a partnership, it's not just about working with schools and young people. You have to develop those partnership skills and awareness with employers. So we do training, we do a Be Prepared workshop, we do mentoring training as well. So some of our businesses will take apprentices on, but because they've not had young people in the workplace for so long, they've perhaps forgotten how to engage with them. So we do things like mentoring training, indispensable me training, so how to become an indispensable employee. So we gap fill, actually, JMA. Where the provision's not out there, we listen to what employers say, we listen to what schools say, and we gap fill. We get no public sector money, we charge for services, or we have to write out to get sponsorship and things like that. Brings its difficulties, that, but it also brings its freedom, because she can... If somebody has a great idea and think this is what's needed, so long as we can gather enough people and enough resources behind it, we can actually, you know, fulfil that need, which is what we're doing in primary. So it's fab. It's great.
Fantastic.
And just a massive thank you to everybody that supports us. As I say, we can't do this without employers. This whole thing is funded by employers, and they're just wonderful. And it's great.
Superb. Well, if you're an employer listening to this programme, you can get in touch directly with Jackie. Jackie, do you want to give the website address out?
www.work-wise.co.uk. And WorkWise came from, you know, when you say kids are streetwise and they know how to behave and get round in streets and be confident, that's what employers said, our kids aren't WorkWise, and hence that's where the name came from.
Superb. Jackie, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Jackie Freeburn of WorkWise. Next up, John Silker, Chief Exec of Magna. John, brilliant. Thanks for joining me. Now, this is a superb event to host at Magna, isn't it?
Can I say it's my pleasure to discuss this with you. This is absolutely incredible. This Guts project that has been going on, it's been here now for the last 2 years. I think this is the third year, and it's grown each year. And the benefits to the region of South Yorkshire and what happens within this area, people don't realise all the different companies and what they do. And then you've got the youngsters coming here from in their teens to see how they can look at different things and see a future, to then go into specialised industries for the future and for South Yorkshire to grow in the future.
So it's great for the city region, it's great for the young people and the employers, as we've heard from,
yes,
from Jackie as well, and from employers themselves. Great for Magna, though, to be working with this event. I mean, it's growing with you since moving to Magna. Great kind of event for you to host, and good for the fortunes and for the sustainability and the success of Magna as well.
It is, and I've been here 3 years now in, yep, this month in April, and I know there's been bad press in the past about Magna and the future of Magna, and will it be here? Yes, it will be here. We've grown year on year with our events from nationally to regionally of what Magna can do. And I think Magnet has a huge future in for it, in developing new companies to come here so they can see the flexibility of this property, be it regionally, sub-regionally and nationally. Because when you look at Sheffield City region, we are in the centre of the country. From London, you can get the train up 2 hours or 1 hour 50. From Manchester, there's an hour plus. From my home city in Liverpool, even though I live here and I love it here, it's an hour 45, 2 hours. I'm from Newcastle, it's 2 hours. So we can attract large international companies to come here for exhibitions and events similar to this. And we need to be, keep banging this drum of how good this area is.
How good the city region is as a location, and Magna as a unique venue for events like this. I mean, there's very few places of this size in the entire country.
There is nowhere like here. And when you're looking at exhibition space, you've then got to go to the NEC. There is nothing from the NEC up. Yes, there's the arena in Sheffield, but it's a different type of a venue. And then from ourselves, then you're up to Harrogate and beyond. And there's nothing like Magna.
So
nothing at all.
So you've been here, as we know, for 3 years in post here, and you've been on the show before talking about some of the challenges that you perceived in the role and how you'd address them and how you'd take Magna forward. And as we all know, it can't have been the easiest 3 years, but you're taking the business forward and, as you say, growing year on year. How then would you most, if you could wave a magic wand and get the sort of policy changes or the support from government or national or local just to happen, what would be your biggest wish that would help Magna?
Biggest wish. I've got lots of wishes for Magna. I would love central government to invest in science and exhibition centres like this. The visitor attraction, in saying, well, right, OK, we understand. If we invest in the visitor attraction, so then we've got school children coming here who can then see the past and what can be achieved in the future with new technologies. With Magna, the exhibition space and conference space is just keep going, building that, as we are doing with the team I work with, and bringing larger companies here. And obviously, I think we've discussed this previously about having a hotel, because we lose deferred business, is roughly $1 million a year on conferences and exhibitions, because there isn't a hotel on site.
And that would make a massive difference. Yeah.
Massive. But when we lose that deferred business goes, it doesn't go or stay in anywhere else in city region.
No.
It leaves and it goes elsewhere nationally. And I think that's a sin. We need to ensure that it stays within South Yorkshire and we develop this exhibition centre for the future.
John Silker, thank you very much for joining me.
My pleasure.
Chris Harrop of Prior, you're here on the Institute of Mechanical Engineers.
That's right.
Stand.
Yeah.
You've had a busy day.
It has been a very busy day, yeah. We've brought one of our little dot marker machines down here today and customising some stainless steel rules with kids' names and some sort of web addresses for the MFK and for Prior on there.
So how many have
very
you done?
Very popular. Must be somewhere in the region of 400, 500, something like that. It has been relentlessly busy all day, which is encouraging to see the interest in engineering.
Well, that is encouraging, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And we've heard a lot from the organisers about how this is a two-way process. It, you know, it's a benefit to businesses as well as giving you time. It's important then for you as a business in terms of engaging the next generation.
No, it is. And not just the next generation, but also the other exhibitors that come here. You know, obviously getting kids interested in engineering, going through engineering, through education, is obviously going to help the industry in the future, so the next generation coming into it. But also, you know, there must be half a dozen companies here that have expressed interest in the kit. help them out with marking problems and stuff themselves.
So it's good for your business right
two
now.
Two ways, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Works both ways, as you say.
Excellent.
So,
well, Chris,
interesting event.
Superb. Thanks very much for joining us.
That's
and
right.
you get a well-deserved rest soon.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Indeed. Thanks, Chris.
Cheers.
Nick Naylor, Bloodhound Education Team, thanks very much for joining us today. First of all, many of our listeners will be aware of Bloodhound, but some won't. Can you introduce it? Can you tell us a little bit, what is Bloodhound?
Bloodhound is an iconic engineering symbol of British innovation. We, as a team, have held the land speed record since 1983, progressing from Thrust 2 to Thrust SSC to now the proposed Bloodhound SSC. It's been a massive journey of learning and involvement. There are several reasons why we're actually embarking upon this adventure. One is to break the land speed record, obviously, and increase our dominance in land speed. Secondly is to bring engineering and innovation of Great Britain into the fore on a global platform to shine out. And yes, we are probably the best engineers in the world and have been for many years. We just don't shout about it loud enough. We have got many, many, many brilliant businesses in Sheffield and around the country that are actually taking part in Bloodhound by providing science, technology, engineering and goods effectively to enable us to get this car to 1,000 miles an hour. But one of the main reasons is to actually engage with young people to look at science, technology, engineering, and science as a career, potential career pathway, because we are desperately short of engineers in this country throughout all disciplines of engineering, because most people perceive engineering to be just sort of like greasy overalls, spanners, that type of thing. But that is so far from the truth. We have got absolutely gone miles from there using computer sciences, using new processes, that we can actually be in a clean environment when we're developing these new things, and we are very good at it in this country and we should shout about it.
So a fantastic project that enables British engineering to be seen as to gain recognition for
yep.
for its expertise and to be seen as such. And a project that engages young people. We'll be hearing from one of those people later on in the programme today, Jess Herbert, in another interview. But Bloodhound here is at the centrepiece of the Getting Up to Speed event today. And you've had 1,600 school children coming in today and coming in and looking at Bloodhound and looking at the model and talking to you. What are they asking you most?
They're asking us mostly about the sort of science, the technology that's gone into to Bloodhound. I mean, some of the fantastic numbers that we're playing with here are really mind-boggling. I mean, this car has got the equivalent of 135,000 horsepower. That's the QE2 had somewhere in the region of 110,000 horsepower. We've got 135,000 horsepower. So an absolutely incredible amount of power. And these numbers are just mind-boggling to these young people. And that's what it needs to do. It needs to inspire them for the thirst to find out more, to look at science and technology, embrace it, and take that out into the workplace in their future careers, and hopefully enhance all of our lives in this country and beyond so that we can enjoy our progress and technical development.
So Bloodhound then, the technology involved, enhances our lives in loads of other ways. The project itself engages young people, excites them about engineering as a career, but the project itself also has significant business benefits right now in the region, in the Sheffield City region and nationally. Can you tell us a little bit more about those business benefits?
Yeah, the business benefits are we've got several partners that actually build things for us or provide technical services. We've got the AMRC Sheffield that have done a lot of work for us. At the cutting edge of science and technology, we've got Newburgh Engineering and a whole raft of other companies that are engaging with Bloodhound right through all the technical developments, because Bloodhound is not only a land speed record car, is not only an inspiration for young people, but it is actually a rolling laboratory where companies can come along with us on the journey, on the adventure, to use Bloodhound for their research and development, new processes, new techniques, new materials that can enhance Bloodhound but also enhance their companies going forward into potentially opening new markets on a global platform.
significant project then of huge benefit. Nick, thanks so much for joining us today.
No worries. Thank you very much indeed.
So I'm joined now by 19-year-old Jess Herbert. Jess, hi, thanks for joining me.
Hi.
So you have been involved with Bloodhound, and it all started, your apprenticeship with Rolls-Royce started because of your interest here. Tell the listeners how it began.
Yeah, that's exactly right. When I was growing up, I loved doing marine biology. I could tell you 1,001 useless facts about sharks, and I'd never really considered engineering as a career path for me until I sort of got introduced to the Bloodhound project. And I started asking question after question, how can we make this car go 1,000 miles an hour? Won't it take off? What happens if it goes into the ground? What happens if we stand it on end and fire it in the air? And all of these questions that made me suddenly sort of key into engineering as a subject. And I started talking to more and more people. I visited the workshop, and from there I learned about Rolls-Royce and the connection that Bloodhound have with them. And then the team encouraged me to apply for an apprenticeship. They really supported me and kind of pushed it forwards and said, well, actually, this is for you. So from there, I applied for the apprenticeship, and I was fortunate enough to be one of the 12 technical apprentices taken on in that year.
So that's superb. Rolls-Royce said to you, right, you've got this interest, go for it. Go for an apprenticeship, and they supported you, and you got it.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I had this network of people working on like the forefront of technology who were all telling me, actually, why are you saying you can't do this? Why are you stopping yourself from being part of the next team doing the next 1,000-mile-hour car or the next fantastic innovation that's centred in Great Britain? So,
and then in that apprenticeship, you've been instrumental in some projects that have been of huge value to Rolls-Royce. You told the crowd here about a couple of them, which have been massively beneficial in terms of technology and cost.
Yeah, definitely. I think as apprentices, we're given a huge amount of responsibility, and you're sort of given the opportunity to push yourself into these situations. So I can say that I've helped to save £10 million for the company by designing a new piece of tooling to be used, or that I've justified the purchase of £3 million worth of machines. And that's all through kind of this drive given to me by Bloodhound and the support I was given at that early stage.
And that's incredible at this stage in your career as well. I mean, that's remarkable, but it makes you a hugely valuable asset to the team at Rolls-Royce as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's amazing, even to myself, when I say what I've achieved in the past few years. It's kind of, I have to take a step back sometimes and say, wow, is that the same person that started this apprenticeship? It's amazing.
Magnificent. So now the apprenticeship is close to finishing. So the next step is a job role at Rolls-Royce.
Yes, that's my plan at the moment. So I've got a few months left of my apprenticeship. So I'm kind of trying to look around to see what jobs are available and where I can take myself next and what's going to happen in the next 5 or 10 years' time.
And so if you had, I suppose, a message to give to young people who were and now at the stage you were a few years ago, what would it be?
I think I'd tell them to think that if someone says you can't do it, that's a reason for you to go out and do it. Prove them wrong.
Prove them wrong. Fantastic. Well, Jess, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
OK, so James Allen, Rolls-Royce, what's your job title?
So I'm a team leader at the Advanced Blade-Casting Facility.
You've had a busy day.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I've been really busy this morning, tapered off a bit this afternoon, but still getting people coming around asking lots of questions, mainly about apprenticeships and graduate schemes.
And so you're an internationally recognisable company.
Yeah.
People will want to come and work for you, and people
yeah.
want to come and ask you lots of questions. The biggest question is about apprenticeships. That's
yeah.
the one that's coming up.
Yeah, definitely. And basically, the best way to go about it is through online, through our website. Follow the links and go through that way. There's different types of apprenticeships. You have your technical and your practical. And on top of that, you've also got your undergraduate and then your graduate schemes. So there's something for everyone. It's about what's right for you, really.
Right, there's a whole range of things.
Yeah, sure.
Depending on where you are at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Absolutely. And so coming to an event like this, it's important in terms of explaining this to the young generation?
Yeah, especially so trying to encourage science, technology, engineering and maths in the younger generations, because there is a shortfall in engineering. So trying to promote the things that people might see and about how important engineering is, trying to really encourage that and drive that to try and promote engineering really in our, because like I say, there's a shortfall.
Indeed. Great. Well, great that you're here today in that case, James. Yeah. Thanks very much for joining me.
Yeah. Cheers. Thank you very much.
Anne Wilson, New Mill Engineering, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
So, first of all, you've been on this programme before, and since the last time you were on the show, I think congratulations are in order.
Yes, indeed. I received an MBE in the New Year's Honours List, which is a great honour, and it is for services to engineering, which is fabulous for the region, for me, for the company, etc. So, yeah, really, really humbled and honoured.
Well, superb. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you are well known for your support of youngsters, the next generation, apprenticeships, and really, really giving an enormous amount in terms of encouraging people into careers and helping them and showing them. So presumably that'd be one of the reasons why you're here at this event today.
Yes, it's you know, it is about supporting students, about giving them aspirations, about letting them know what careers are out there for them, related predominantly to engineering. And it's not just an engineer that's actually going to make something. Within that, we will need lawyers, we'll need accountants with specialisms around engineering. So it's not necessarily just about the person that stands on the machine, which we need to get across to all young people, that we need to make things to have a positive economy. I'm now working with Governor at a primary school. I work with Cutler's Champions. I'm Cutler's Champion for Outwood City Academy, just being unveiled as their enterprise advisor as well. And I'm also Governor of Sheffield College. So for me, it's about the lifelong learning and seeing what we're putting in at the, you know, sort of the at five and six, to what we're going to get out at the other end when we need employable young people in the workforce.
Superb. So that must all keep you extremely busy.
It does, and but with pleasure as well. And it's about collaboration. It's about working with people, and the people that set up this exhibition for Get Up to Speed today, the Workwise Foundation, is absolutely incredible. It's a charitable organisation, and they work so incredibly hard to take the message into schools, and they are now working with primary schools as well, which is phenomenal.
Excellent. Well, we've heard a bit about that from Jackie earlier, and we're hearing from John as well from Workwise. They do indeed work phenomenally hard. You've been working hard on the New Mill stand at the event today.
Yes, we have. We've had you know, sort of quite a lot of interest from the young people, and also from their teachers, their careers advisors, the people that are looking for outreach services, that are looking for entrepreneurs to go and talk to the students so that they can have those aspirations. And obviously, I do have a bit of a story to tell myself, from bookkeeper to owner, and now, you know, so, with the MBE, it is, you know, if I can use that to aspire just one young person, then that's really what I want to do with it.
Magnificent. Well, Anne Wilson, thank you so much for joining us
thank
today.
Thank you, Jamie. Thanks very much. A pleasure.
Right, I'm joined now by Jim Lawson of the Wasco Brown Foundation. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Jamie.
So thanks for joining me. A busy day today for you and colleagues from Wasco Brown.
Very busy, yep. This is the second year we've done now, and it gets bigger. This event gets bigger each year. So there's a real influx of students and schools early doors, which is always the case. I think someone said there was a couple of thousand outside very early, so we're busy first thing, and then it quietened off a bit.
And now it's getting noisy again, because we can hear in the background the noise of a Formula One simulator, and of course also the noise of hoops being scored in a basketball hoop.
That's right. So one of the challenges, I think, for businesses to try and engage students and young people is about, and the idea of Get Up to Speed is trying to engage things that, you know, have something about them and are of interest. So you've got car simulators, Formula One simulators, Scale Extra Gear, and we've got our own Mike Tuck, who's captain of the Sheffield Sharks basketball team, challenging a few people to shoot a few hoops. And we've also got our Watt bikes here, so you get two people who race each other on a 200-yard sprint. So it's all about trying to make it engaging and exciting for young students, really.
And it seems to be the case with, as you say, hundreds of school children and students outside this morning queuing to get in and then having a fantastic day here.
That's right, and I think the opportunity also for later on in the day for parents to come beyond 4 o'clock, so it gets busy again, Jamie, between 4 and half 5. And I think the real serious message, a lot of this stuff is about engaging young people, so it's fun, but actually the serious message here is about careers, Yes. And you know how we pick those. It's difficult for someone, you know, sort of 15 to 17 to know what they want to do for the rest of their careers. So what the businesses here do is give some kind of an indication of bringing their jobs and their firms alive for young people, to give them some idea of the kind of jobs they have. We, from our point of view, we've done a little leaflet for students to take away, which give you some idea of the kind of careers there are in a law firm, because typically young people might think if you work in a law firm, you're a lawyer. But we have lawyers there, of course we do, but also we have people like IT, design, HR, you know, building facilities management. So there's a spread of job roles even in a law firm.
Indeed, which people might not know about until they've talked to you by coming here today. So great. Brilliant day. Thanks, Jim, for joining us.
Thanks, Jamie.
Have you had a good day so far?
It's been really good. It's been really busy. We've seen lots of different students from across the region, lots of different ages, and a lot of interest in STEM at the University of Sheffield. We're pleased to report.
Well, that's tremendous news. That's great. And events like this then get people interested because they can see the careers that they can go into, and it's really actually quite exciting as well, isn't it?
It is. Sometimes it's hard to imagine what an engineering degree is going to be like, especially if you don't really come into contact with engineering and industry and things like that. So it's good to get a feel for it, especially when you're quite young, and actually get excited and enthusiastic about it rather than just doing it as a subject in school.
Yes, indeed. So what was it about the subject that got you originally interested?
Well, I study material science and engineering, and I've changed on to biomaterials now, so I study biomaterials. And I just like the way that, for example, atoms interact, they become molecules, which then come on to make objects, you know, and items around us, and how everything interacts. So, for example, when you put a metal in the body, how is it going to react? Is it going to poison you, or is it going to act really well, you know? And it's really important, and it's actually helping a lot of people's lives, which I really like, you know.
So applying that then in the workplace in future, you're going to have the opportunity to make a positive social impact in terms
hopefully.
Of society
we
as
do
well.
Things in the department like tissue engineering, where you can replace parts of the body that have been damaged by disease or injury. So when people are injured and they're in a lot of pain, or they can't move, they're immobile, technology like this is important to their lives, and I like that something that I'm studying could be able to help someone's life in future. I like that.
This technology sounds absolutely fascinating, and the university here are working hard on a worldwide level. How do you compare with the research that's going on elsewhere?
Well, it's really incredible. Sometimes when you're in lectures and you're learning about these topics, and maybe your lecturer is actually the person who's pushing these things and actually is the lead researcher in it, it's really amazing to actually be able to talk to the people who are at the forefront of everything. It's quite exciting.
Oh, superb. That's fantastic. Well, Lauren, thank you very much for joining me. And Lucy, a great day here. It's been well worth being here by the sounds of it, in terms of the chance to speak with so many young people. What else do you do to engage youngsters and get them interested and excited?
Well, that's a very good question. We have a whole host of initiatives at Sheffield in our outreach team. So we run outreach projects for all of the different faculties at the university, and I run this STEM one, so science, technology, engineering and maths. And currently we're targeting year 12 students. So we want students in the local region who classify them as the most able but the least likely to attend university. And we work with them over 2 years, year 12 and 13, with a whole host of initiatives to try and help to encourage them to apply to university, to think about higher education and to think about their future.
And some of the work that you've done has also been targeted at girls of that age, to demonstrate to them that STEM subjects are interesting and subjects that they can pursue and have a fantastic, fascinating career.
Yes, you've worked
in partnership with other education providers as well, I understand.
Yes, there are a whole host of initiatives. We work quite closely with WISE, that's Women in Science and Engineering.
Yeah.
So we're really hoping to encourage more young women to think about STEM as a career and a future. And a lot of our ambassadors are young women themselves, and they're the best people to come and speak to find out about their educational journey and their hopes and aspirations for the future.
Excellent. Well, glad it's been such a productive day for you. Thanks for joining me, Lucy.
Thank you.
John, thanks very much for joining me. We've heard a lot from Jackie earlier at the start of this segment today, You must be exhausted. What a brilliant day.
It's been fantastic. I think it's been the best yet. This is the sixth year we've done it, Jamie. We moved here to Magna 2 years ago. We reckon, we haven't done the total amount, but we reckon we had over 2,000 people here, predominantly young people, teachers, the kids, the teachers we really want to influence and try and get our message across for. So, yeah, it's been a fantastic day. Yes, I'm shattered. We haven't finished yet. We've got another 2 or 3 hours to go and all the tidying up to do afterwards. But the adrenaline and the buzz keeps you going, really. So, yeah, it's been a really, really good day.
Excellent. And we heard from Jackie how it's not a sort of one-way street with employers simply giving their time and allowing children to ask them and students to ask some questions. The employers themselves get a huge amount out of it as well.
They do. For some, it's the obvious stuff, like it's future employees. So some, we've got some young people here manning the stands as apprentices or maybe even now finished apprenticeship, who 4 or 5 years ago came to this event to find out what engineering was all about, got inspired. We've had one who changed career from being a teacher to becoming an engineer, now a manager in a company, ASSEAL. So, you know, we've got some real stories there, and that's a real tangible business benefit. But there's all the, if you like, the other benefits that are not quite so visible, like staff development, you know, for the apprentices who are here, for the managers who are here. It's a great day. Talk to one of our sponsors today, and I'm not going to quote the sponsor, the company, but basically he says he's worked in this particular industry for 30 years, and today is one of the best days he's had in 30 years of his career, talking to and working with young people. So, yeah, so it's also about helping these employers to develop the future workforce. You know, it might not be today, it might not be tomorrow, it might be in a year's time, 2 years' time, 5 years' time. But so for some employers, this is a long-term investment in their business and in the future of our young people.
Superb. Well, clearly a successful investment, clearly a successful day today. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And, looking forward to next year.
Yeah, the planning starts next week, actually. It's a 12-month process. It's a great event to be involved in. We have some fantastic partners. Everybody gives their time. The partners help me organise this, you know. Have some great ideas, but put their efforts in free of charge, their time in free of charge. We couldn't do it without the employers, and with all, also about the support organisations within the city region. So it really is a city region initiative. It's not just down to us guys. Yeah, we're at the sharp end, but there's a lot of people involved in making this work where as successful as it has been.
Excellent. John, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome, Jim. Cheers.
John Barber there of the Workwise Foundation in the final one of our interviews recorded at the Get Up to Speed event at Magna on Wednesday. The show's also featured Pete Brown, author of the Sheffield Beer Report, Jackie Freeborn of Workwise, John Silker of Magna, Anne Wilson of New Mill Engineering, Jim Lawson, Wasco Brown, Lucy Machin and Lauren Browning of the University of Sheffield, James Allen at Rolls-Royce, Chris Harrop at Prior, Jess Herbert at Rolls-Royce and Nick Naylor of the Bloodhound Education Team. Thanks for tuning in today. Next up on Sheffield Live, our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk. Stay tuned for that from 10 through to noon. We're going to play out with a bit of Prince.